Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, where we wish the Cheer Up Marty store a happy 20th anniversary. I'm your host, Bob Unscrupulous Media Giant Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of The Critic. Who else is here with me today?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and this podcast comes with a free cookie puss.
Who else is here?
It's Michael, Eater of Souls.
Rabaras. And who else?
And Diana Goodman, the hero of the boys of the USS Nimitz.
And today's episode is A Day at the Races and A Night at the Opera.
Hello. I would like to dance and sing my country's national anthem. Ee-pee-tee-pee-pee-pee-poopee.
And today's episode aired on July 6, 1994. And as always, Henry will tell us what movies are out in this week in history.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby! Only one new one this week, but it is a doozy as baby boomers relive every moment of their lives through the rose-tinted glasses of Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump taught me so much about life.
He's Gump. He's Gump. He's in my head.
It's good to make money, and it's bad to trust hippies.
It is. I mean, okay, so the creator of Forrest Gump, the author Winston Groom, hates this movie. And in fact, the sequel book, Gump and Company, sort of pisses all over the movie because his point is America is so bad, someone that is intellectually disabled can coast through life because America is bad. It wasn't like, isn't that touching, this heartfelt man?
I remember there are jokes, like he tells jokes about being in the special kids class in the beginning about and then like throwing shit and stuff. It's much darker and dirtier than the... Also, in the book, he goes into space.
With a chimp.
With a chimp, yes. I think they saw that was a bridge too far for Forrest in the movie. Perhaps, but the movie... When I rewatched it, I was like, boy, this is bullshit. It is about, like, what if a lucky, mentally handicapped person bounces around through life and everything's good for him and he meets everybody and it's a way, like, it genially bounces off everything that happened in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and into the 80s of, like, it's Watergate, whatever. Everybody's wrong. Maybe the Black Panthers were too mean, but also the Vietnam War wasn't nice. And then the worst of all is what happens to Jenny. Like, she is punished for nothing. Like, she is, her life is so cruel and horrible that she is molested as a child and then has to deal with that the rest of her life and can't. And
just gets, like, fucked up. Boyfriend to abuse of a boyfriend and all the drugs and the suicide attempts to free Bird.
And then she gets AIDS for her trouble as well. And I also don't like the narrative of, like, well, Forrest is the nice guy who finally gets to have sex with her. And from
she's kind of a rapist.
A little bit, yeah. And, I could take it that way.
Well, yes, because he is mentally deficient. Yeah. So
I don't know if he can consent.
Yeah, and also as a kid, I definitely did not understand she gave him a hand job. Like the
When
she's like, I especially seeing it as an adult when she says, we're going to have to get some new sheets, meaning he cummed all over her sheets. Like, sorry to put that word in this podcast.
My touching family movie, no. I mean, I think the thesis of that movie was, these are the best times to be alive if you were a man and you weren't there, man, unless you were.
No, my parents loved it. Loved it. It was the way a certain part of the baby boomer generation chooses to remember that stuff. I'm just like, yeah, Vietnam wasn't great, but, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, but some of those hippies beat their girlfriends. I guess that makes the more...
That guy, seems like you're pretty much a hypocrite, too. Yeah, and same with, like, when they're integrating schools, that Forrest just like, oh, okay. Well, like, no. I like the film a lot less than I did as a child.
I also remember it being like this and Jurassic Park were like the start of the mainstream's fascination with computers.
Oh, you're right.
Computers do. Like, everybody kept talking about, like, oh, it's so amazing, these effects that put these famous people at these places and put these words in their mouth, and I watch it, and it's like, this is such garbage.
Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
Like, John Lennon, it looks like Clutch Cargo with an animated mouth over his face.
Well, it's easy if you troll it. My impersonation was as good as the one in the movie.
It really was, yeah.
But this comes right after the Philips Vision episode, which talked about making dead people move around.
How fitting.
You know, I forgot to mention that Philips Vision episode, we get an Edward G. Robinson impersonation, which is more direct than Wiggum's one. Like, Wiggum Adams is a bad, as Hank Azaria says, all his characters are bad impersonations of famous people. That's how he makes an original character. Like Moe is a bad impersonation of Dog Day Afternoon Pacino, who then grew into something more. And same with Wiggum is a bad impersonation of Edward G. Robinson.
So I want to welcome Ken Keeler to the greater Simpsons universe, writer of some of the most hated Simpsons episodes until they got much worse. But I will say he's a great writer, possibly the nerdiest man alive.
He really
on the planet.
Is.
Move over, Al Jean.
I mostly think of him as Futurama guy.
Yeah, he was a big Futurama guy.
Yeah, Ken Keeler was at the time in 1994, was a young writer who had previously worked, his biggest name things were Wings.
Another Wings writer, hello.
And also Letterman.
Right.
And he would become a full-time writer in season two, which is also how he snuck on to The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
He worked in season six of The Simpsons, which part of the deal, we'll get into it more in the next season of The Critic, but part of the deal was that the critic staff would also write two Simpsons episodes. And so Ken Keeler is the writer of A Star Is Burns, the crossover episode.
That's right.
And then he would become a full-time writer on The Simpsons after The Critic is gone. He would write the Armin Tamzarian episode, which would forever make him a nemesis of Simpsons fans, which honestly, I like the Armin Tamzarian episode.
Me too. I can't wait to talk about it.
It could be worse.
And, oh, it is. It can get so much worse.
Yes.
That night, I'd watch a million Armin Tamzarians before that 90s episode. And then Ken Keeler would find his true calling, which is being the mega, mega dork on the Futurama staff. Like, David X. Cohen gets out-nerded by Ken Keeler all the time on those commentaries. And it's like, But David Cohen's whole thing is that he's the dork who has a science degree.
They both have PhDs.
Yes.
I think Ken Keeler's is in math. I forget which kind of math, but he has a PhD in math.
Yeah, and so I wish Keeler was more involved in these commentaries. I'd be interested. I would love to interview him about what it was like to work on The Critic in that second season. If he helped with, there was written episodes for a third season of Critic before they got canceled.
Aww.
So I'd like to know about those. And then, yeah, that he is the Armin Tamzarian guy as well.
Mm-hmm. So previously we saw Honey, I Laminated the Kids. Let's listen to Honey, I Ate the Kids.
Sweetheart, have you seen Timmy, Becky, and Alex?
I haven't seen them since lunch. We had fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Did you eat the kids again?
Clarice, you don't look so well. Let me take your temperature.
That's a meat thermometer?
So it is, Clarice.
I mean, everyone had to do that joke at some point, right?
Yes.
A nice Chianti.
Yeah, but, but they did a real good job with the score.
Yeah, the score is dead on.
And the Jodie Foster impression's great.
Yeah. Well, that house is pretty much the house where Hopkins is caught in the beginning of Silence of the Lambs, where he says that, well, actually he says that
later.
Well,
no, he says that in prison.
Yeah, but I forgot this episode begins with a joke that children have been eaten. That children have been murdered and
again.
Eaten.
Again.
Yeah, again.
They tried so many times to have a family. He keeps eating the kids.
Yeah, so he's repeatedly, they've had several children, raised them to a certain age, and then he's eaten them.
As a group, too. Yeah. He doesn't eat one kid. He's like, I gotta wait till there's three.
You gotta make a nice child stew out of them.
And that Jodie Foster would not come back for the sequel.
Thank God.
I think she didn't. I believe it was that Thomas Harris wrote her character much worse in the second book. And then when she saw her, and she's murdered, I believe, in the second book.
No.
Oh, no?
No, okay. They live happily ever after.
Okay. And I think Jodie Foster wasn't down for that, surprisingly. Yeah, what was that one? It wasn't
Hannibal.
Hannibal. Barf.
Sucks.
I'd read at least the movie is fun in stupid ways.
It's got a couple good fun stupid scenes.
I love seeing Ray Liotta's brains being eaten while he's still alive.
That's pretty sweet. So
and then fed his own brain.
Yeah. So we mentioned that this is called Day at the Races, Night at the Opera. So the Marx Brothers formed in 1905 as
right.
a vaudeville act.
Mm-hmm.
What is this? You must remember this all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm Karina Longworth. Okay. No. So anyway, I just wanted to. I'm just trying to promote Marx Brothers for the children.
I love the Marx Brothers so much. I liked them. I came to love the Marx Brothers first because they basically did a Tiny Toons episode that was made to advertise the Marx Brothers where they act out the Marx Brothers scenes with Babs Bunny as Groucho and Buster Bunny as Chico.
Nice.
And they just redid those scenes. But then I really got into them when I worked at the video store, the mom and pop video store where I could put on whatever I wanted. And putting on Marx Brothers movies in the background really made time fly because they're just so peppy and fun. The only problem with them is that every act, they have to have like, and now a song. I was like, I don't want to hear this song.
Yeah, every now and then there's like the sappy love story. I mean, they're trying
Fucking Zeppo shows up, like, get out of here.
And sings a love song, and you're like, Zeppo, I hear you're a wonderful guy, but I mean, come on.
I came here for the three guys.
Yeah, but then, you know, Chico ends up, he does a piano thing, and then Harpo somehow has a harp now, and so he's going to do a harp. And Groucho is a contender for the funniest person that ever lived.
Chico, yes, he is the funniest. Chico was my favorite. I loved his scenes between him and Groucho are the greatest. Like, especially Sanity Clause is one of the best.
Yeah, there's lots of wordplay. The movies are short. They move fast. Duck Soup is a masterpiece of political satire.
Please watch
these movies.
Yes. I love in Duck Soup where he has Chico on the stand. And he's like, what about taxes? Hey, I got an uncle who's Dallas of Texas. Hey, that's a good one.
I want to know, like, why is this episode named this? Because the two stories have nothing to do with each other?
Well, there is a throwaway joke about the writers of Animal Crackers and Coconuts. There is the joke about Moss Hart and...
Oh, you're right. Okay,
that's true. That starts with the... Yeah. I mean, sort of starts with the Marty's Field Day at School. So that's Day at the Races.
Okay.
And then it ends with a performance in an auditorium, which is the Night at the Opera.
Okay, so...
I still don't buy it.
It's a little too clever of a title.
It's reaching.
They didn't think we'd see these titles. So, also, A Day at the Races is my least favorite Marx Brothers film, only because, well, obviously they're too old, but they're getting too old, but also that, like... Groucho feels guilt in it. There's a part where he's like, oh, I fooled this woman about this horse. And he feels bad. I was like, Groucho should never feel bad about anything. He should only be taking advantage of people. Duck Soup, that's the one to watch. If you're going to watch one, watch Duck Soup.
Duck Soup and Night at the Opera are my two favorites, I think.
So I feel like the theme, recurring theme in the critic is that Jay's ratings are bad. And this pops up this episode sort of, it really shouldn't because of what Jay receives later. But I didn't include the whole joke, but I love this line that Duke says about the channel that's beating Jay is a shoe in a dryer. And this is what they talk about.
People watch this?
They don't just watch it. They send it money.
I like the idea of people's
little eyes going around and round watching it.
And I love that immediately after saying that, they stare at in rapt attention.
Yeah, it's like, it's almost ominous. Like, this thing is going to take over our minds. They send it money. Like, who put this on the
it's
air?
It's like Hypnotoad.
I was going to say, functionally, it's Hypnotoad. I wonder if this is Ken Keeler in the
Maybe.
But I was thinking of our Patreon with the line, they don't just watch it, they send it money, which you send us money. So thank you.
A little more entertaining than a shoe in a dryer.
I would hope so. I hope we all are. But you definitely are.
Thank you. So this is our first real exploration of the UN school, right?
We see
the outside of it, maybe.
We had Parent Teachers Day.
We had International Food Fight.
But this is the introduction of the principal the principal and Easter Island kid who, from then on, UN school jokes were not complete without either of them showing up.
Does the Easter Island kid die in this scene, though?
He falls over. There's no confirmed death.
We hear the thing shatter, though, don't we?
Yes, that's true. But he seemingly, unless there's tons of Easter Island kids at the UN school, he can break his head all the time and just reform, I guess.
Maybe. And I think I blew Henry's mind out in the hallway when I told him the principal is Dr. Hibbert of this episode, of the show, actually.
Yes. Like,
he laughs inappropriately. He's also a black guy, an authority figure. So there you go.
He's mean. He's Principal Mangasutu. Mangasutu.
Yeah.
And he is a great laugher of just like, ah! It's great and big. At first, I misremembered him as a parody of Kofi Annan, who was the Secretary General of the UN, but in 97, so it couldn't have been the same.
Okay, a little early.
But he's also quite different as the show's regular principal, quite different from Seymour Skinner, wouldn't you say?
He is
much crueler. Like, he straight up laughs in the face of children all the time.
Laughs he laughs at everything.
Seems to delight in the humiliation of children.
Yeah, especially Marty. He just loves, actually all children.
The idea that they have a booby prize during a school competition.
And everyone watches,
in front of everyone.
That's what we used to have instead of participation medals, kids.
We humiliated kids until they felt awful.
And that makes them better people, I hear.
It builds character much more so than celebrating them when they didn't really win. How dare that child have pride?
We get another flashback to Jay's horrible past where he's used as a threat to the women. He will kiss the loser. and the women's track team. They all became gay.
Yeah, I love his. I love the implication, but not implication. Him saying he's been practicing on his dog.
Dog, yeah.
Which, out of all animals to kiss, I don't know.
At least kiss your hand or something.
You're practicing. I love the idea of him like, okay, so I got to put in some practice time. Come here, Muffy. Come here, Muffy. Okay.
And though it's a weak, it is a weak ADR joke.
It really is.
The gay women's Olympic relay team. Like, we get it. You made them lesbians. There's a funnier way to do that joke.
Not only lesbians, but champion runners.
Yeah. They're proud and strong lesbians.
And there's some great subtle acting. When Jay walks up, Ardith immediately like retracts, like, yuck.
And we learn more about their relationship, and I think it paints Jay in a really negative light in that she has a restraining order against him, and then later when she asks him on a date, he claims that her macing him hasn't stopped him before. So what the fuck, Jay Sherman? What's going on with you?
A really messed up relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is. And so then actually we get a really novel use of a Brando joke compared to the previous fat Brando joke because so they're playing a game where the beach – where the basically soccer except the soccer ball is way too big for the goal. And he says it is inspired by a famous actor that lives on their island. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to people trying to shove Brando through a doorway on an island. That is a direct reference to the island Marlon Brando then owned called Teti Arroyo. T-E-T-I apostrophe A-R-O-A.
I don't know. Somewhere down in Tahiti.
Yeah,
is that where he kissed Larry King, or am I thinking of a different place?
I believe that is where Larry King visited him for a live interview. And actually, after he died, it was sold off. He didn't say who in his will got it, so it was just sold off to some corporation got it so they could be like, yep, a private island, Marlon Brando's private island, renting it out. And in March, when Obama said, fuck y'all, I'm vacationing, that's one of the places he went to.
Which,
honestly... Watch everything burn down. It's cool. Like you earned a
vacation. That's a good place to go for when you're not sure. Like I don't think the new guy is going to be pushing the right buttons. I'm pretty sure we got 1 week till he blows shit up. Yeah. I want to be in the middle of the South Pacific.
What's got the best bunker? I need to know.
I have to. The only thing that comforts me in that is that if Obama is so relaxed, perhaps it is his realization. Like a president can't actually do anything, so he can't kill all of us. I know. I was just president.
He's gonna try. And we also meet Vlada's son Zoltan.
Yay.
That's right.
Let's listen to him.
Vlada, what are you doing here?
My boy Zoltan also attends this school.
Hello, Mr. Sherman. Thanks to your appetite, we bought a yacht.
I just love the choreographed animation between them. Yes. He's even more of like a simpering like character. Like, hello, Mr. Sherman.
Yeah.
By creating a Vlada son, it lets them do more Vlada jokes. When Vlada isn't there, they can just have the exact same joke out of Zoltan. And I also like Jay's reaction of realizing, like, I eat that much. Like, he's like, oh, I'm in trouble.
Let's discuss for a second. He lives in New York, more restaurants than probably anywhere else in the world, and he always goes to Lane Riche.
And clearly they're overcharging if they can afford a yacht based on his meals there. Even if he ate there every day, like... Would he spend $20,000 there?
I think they're the only place that will make him a Harvey Firestein.
Oh, yeah.
It goes straight to my thighs.
And then there is another really lame joke of Olga Testosterone.
Yeah.
The very good shot putter, which... If a shot put hit you in the head, you are dead. Jay Sherman is dead.
His skull would just explode into pieces.
He said his skull is fractured.
Brains leaking out.
He suddenly cares
about the next Chevy Chase movie.
But the Jay, four episodes earlier, Jay gets hit in the head with a beer bottle and is in the hospital and has a shard of glass to break for the rest of his life. This time when a shot put breaks his skull, the next scene he's like, yeah, fine. He is much more of a cartoon already than he was in Dial M for Mother.
I think Olga is maybe like just a Soviet bloc doping joke.
Yeah.
That's it. Also, Russian women are manly, that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
It's always funny.
And Marty actually goes backwards during the long jump. great animation.
The animation is great, though. Man, the principal laughs in his face in front of everybody. Yeah. Like, you'd have done better if you just stood there, which he's right. I got this episode confused with the season 2 episode where Marty goes to fat camp.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of similar things going on.
Similar shame for Marty, but the fix here is more realistic than him becoming a beautiful hunk.
They both have horses' butts in them.
They do, that's true. Man. And Jay actually lies to Marty, said he's never won anything in his life. We just saw him win a Pulitzer.
Yeah,
and
wait a minute.
What about the Benign Birth Award?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
She's won all these awards. Maybe he means no physical contest?
Yeah, that could except be for it. A wet t-shirt contest, yes. As Artith reminds him.
So let's hear Marty get the booby prize.
This concludes the UN school field day. Like the real UN, there was a lot of heated gibberish, but nothing was accomplished, and we send the bill to Uncle Sam. And now this year's booby prize goes with a massive dose of pity to Martin Sherman.
And this is just a really weird act breaker that there's no joke. It's just shame. Because they walk away in shame.
It's such a downer of an act break. It really is. They just want, like, let's go home, Marty. Like, they don't even say a last joke. He could have done, like, let's go home and eat our feelings. Let's go home. I have a giant pile of ice cream we can split. Something like that. Instead, it's like they'd rather go out on the emotion of sadness and shame. And as a fat kid who didn't do well at field days, this hurts. It hurts watching this little
bit. Well, I was a skinny kid who did bad at field days,
me too.
So I can relate.
No, you're not the same. I will not empathize. Only my problems matter.
Okay.
No, it's true. It is a different level on the social hierarchy of the grade school.
And let's not argue over who was more bullied. But I wonder, do kids still do field days? Is that still a thing?
I'm sure they do. I think so.
Any parents out there, tell us if that's still a thing.
Yeah, we had a field day, but the parents weren't invited. It was some sort of like, today is the thing, you go run around, kids. Fucking shut up.
Though, honestly, you hope they would do it more to get more activity. Though as a kid, I just didn't. I was like, field day, I'm going to try to do as little as I can here to not embarrass myself.
Yeah.
And then I had missed this sign gag until now. I love two guys in Hairnet's pizza.
I forgot about that. And yeah, and then so Jay's trying to cheer up Marty, and we get a special guest in this episode who's also a Simpsons guest, Steve Allen. Apparently, the joke in the 90s was he did everything. He has done everything. In fact, there's an entire Mystery Science Theater sketch about this. It's one of Joel's inventions. Let's listen.
Cool. Well, sirs, our invention exchange is the Steve-o-meter.
No relation to Steve Reeves.
Right. Well, Steve Allen, as you know, is the author of over 300 books and short stories.
Over 4,000 pop songs. The board game Blow Your Own Horn.
Yeah, there's so many things that Steve Allen has thought of. That's why we came up with the Steve-o-meter.
There is the world that is known, there is the unknown, and there is what Steve knows.
Right, exactly. So what you do is if you thought of a new idea, you run the Steve-o-meter over it, and if it buzzes, well, Steve's already thought of it. What have you got for us here, Crow?
Okay. It's an extremely simple and economical desalinization process for seawater.
Oh, okay. Let's run the Steve-o-meter over it. Oh, no. He's thought of it all.
It turns out Steve Allen also invented the Steve-o-meter.
Yeah. And now it's just that Simpsons did it.
Yeah.
Steve Allen was like, what, the first host of The Tonight Show, I think?
After Jack Parr.
Yeah, okay.
He was the one between Parr and Carson, but he was known as an inventor of American comedy tropes. Like, there's a joke on The Simpsons of, if you're anybody but Steve Allen, you're stealing my bit. Mm-hmm. And that everybody stole from. He did the first man on the street jokes. He pioneered a lot of things, and he was just appreciated by comedy dorks everywhere of that generation. And unfortunately, this is right a little before his becoming an angry old man, which was he was kind of misused by, he was always a liberal leaning guy, but in his old age, in the late 90s, he felt what's with all this smut on television? Mm. And he joined the Parents Television Council, the PTC, to talk about the need to clean up the airwaves. And two things he was really mad at was pro wrestling, WWE, and The Simpsons, where he had been guests on both of those multiple times. So it was I don't want to even get too mad at him because I'm like, if he's doing that and he can't remember he did these things, then it's like, are you really all there? Or are you
maybe they got a lot worse over time.
Perhaps.
I don't know. It's also
real weird to look back and realize that, yes, there was a time when Simpsons was considered kind of dirty.
Yeah.
This isn't really appropriate for kids.
According to Wikipedia, Steve Allen had written over 50 books, including autobiographies, children's books, mystery novels, and essays and opinion pieces. 20 of his books also concerned his views about religion.
And he invented the Pog.
Yes, he invented the Pog. Steve Allen did a million things, and the joke in this is that he wrote a Marty book immediately. There's also Dave Merkin loved doing Steve Allen jokes. He did one on Gary Shandling's show where he guest starred in a similar capacity of being introduced playing a piano. And he said, hey, here's a song I wrote while playing that song. I think that's really impressive that he was such a creative dude that he had done so many things.
Yeah.
So Jay references the Maggot King in a kind of bad ADR joke.
Ugh, that joke sucks.
Yeah. Just like Son of a Jackass predicted Son of a Woman, this would predict the Cockroach King, which would be a parody next season with Howard Stern playing the Cockroach King.
The Maggot King, like, taken out of context, sounds like it'd be a really awesome, like, black metal thing.
Yeah, like a metal album.
But then it's like, oh, it's just the Lion King, but with a maggot.
I wonder if
who gives a shit.
If this show hadn't been delayed till June, if that joke would have even been in there.
Oh, I guarantee this was written after the fact.
Yeah, that they just added it to have the Maggot King in there. And then out of nowhere, Jay finds out, one, that he's like, how did he not know a magazine had identified him as the wittiest man in America? And then, two, it looks like he posed for a photo unless they used a file photo of him.
Yeah. Mm.
And then the way he finds out is somebody bought it at a newsstand and then like, hey, you see this? Like, it's I guess Jay just has a terrible agent and publicist who really should be the one to tell him about this.
What happened to the pit bulls?
Oh, yeah. Well, they probably
they
were only his.
Them.
Yeah,
they dropped
him. Yeah.
So this joke. Let's talk about this joke.
Okay.
George S. Kaufman, eat your Moss heart out.
Ah!
And I had to look up this
so
for the
happy.
First time, and now I know who Moss Hart is. I will do nothing with this information.
It was written for dorks like me.
And
I had to look this up.
I am like the youngest person to get this joke.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, you want to explain?
No, go ahead, please.
Okay.
I'll correct you if you miss anything.
Okay.
I'm going to be very broad with this.
They
were two comedic writers and wrote a lot of plays, including
yes.
You Can't Take It With You and The Man Who Came to Dinner.
Yes, definitely.
And also a lot of Marx Brothers musicals.
Indeed.
And Jay is comparing himself to George S. Kaufman.
But he worked with Moss Hart, so the play on Eat Your Moss Hart Out, instead of saying Eat Your Heart Out, he said Eat Your Moss Hart Out, which is a clever turn of phrase, as would be done by the wittiest man on Earth. But that's the only time he's witty this entire episode. It's a real challenge to put on yourself as a writer to say, oh, this guy is really witty. Well,
yeah.
Then you better have some witty-ass shit for him to say.
Yeah. Fact, you, be funny.
He's so witty, Duke has some plans.
Mm. Well, we're back, and...
Folks, this magazine says Jay's the wittiest man alive, so I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Watch Jay for a month, you don't laugh, I pay you $100. Get cracking, wit boy.
Somebody pull my finger.
I can't play it on audio, but I like Duke's mustache smirk. Like
his expression of rage.
Raising a mustache brow.
His lawyer really should have stopped Duke from doing that, but Duke does what he wants to do.
He can't be stopped.
There's no way to judge that. You can't tell if, you know, like, how can you tell if someone hasn't laughed?
Yeah, unless they admit, like, I did laugh, but why would they do that?
It's the honor system.
Because they'd have to give, then, yeah, I'd rather say, no, he never made me laugh, give me $100. If nothing else, to bankrupt a rich man, I would do that. This is also a little similar to the Krusty Burger Olympics challenge, although it did ruin Krusty. He lost so much money.
I will personally spit in every fifth burger.
I like those odds.
And we get another one of the many 90s psychiatry scenes.
Yeah.
Not great.
Marty seeing a therapist next to his dad, like, that is a big no-no. You cannot...
Yeah.
You can, though I appreciate that Marty was able to be super honest, even with his father there.
It's like your father's advice makes you sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I at least like there were 8 million therapy jokes in the 90s, but that he was doing a crossword puzzle and trying to reach answers out of them. Like the, well, you should go on vacation to a 13-letter place.
That's how I learned about Vladivostok.
Yeah. I still don't know much about it.
All I know is Joke and the Critic.
It's the end of the Trans-Siberian Railroad. I don't know if it's an animation error or if they're just messing with us, but then he says, like, how does that make you feel? And he's, like, irritated. And then he's like, thank you, and he fills in irritated. There's, like, a bunch of boxes left. Irritated is not the right
and
word.
And outraged is another.
Outraged,
yeah. They don't fit in the spaces.
It is a challenge to do a joke about writing things in English with Korean animation because it's, like, it's not their language. So sometimes it was something they joked about on the Clerks commentary, too, that they'd misspell quick stop all the time.
It was quilk stop. They'd put, like, a bowl of rice with chopsticks underneath the counter for Dante to eat, presumably.
Dante was a huge otaku, though. So.
Oh, yeah. I'd believe it. But, Bob, you're right that this... we talked about this a little before, that this is another Similar thing on The Critic of an A plot and B plot that have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
Jay's adventure at being the wittiest man alive is completely separate from Marty's sadness.
It's very Simpsons season 4, where there are two plots that never meet and could go anywhere, could be attached to anything.
And it also runs together for me so many times because it's another plot of, like, nobody likes Jay. Like, there's like five of those episodes.
And his ratings are bad. But apparently he's witty, so you have that at least.
And then, again, speaking of them eating their own tail of Simpsons jokes, Duke buys the exact talking keychain Bart has in Lisa the Greek.
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, no one's laughing at you. But we still have 2 weeks before I owe everybody in America $100. Son, I want you to go on the air with this.
Shove it, shove it. Kiss off, kiss off. You smell.
You smell? I never see it coming.
I'm not going on the air with that thing.
All right, I'll give the box its own sitcom. It's called Shove It. Kiss off, you smell.
You smell. I just love Charles Napier. Excellent. Yeah,
Bart those said, were very popular at the time.
Yeah, they
go
were.
To hell. Go to hell.
It were fun things to see at, like, Spencer's Gifts or at an airport gift shop. Just to buy. It was fun. And then we find out Jay has a PhD in film.
That's right, when he's with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Coming Attractions. I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and this is Little Nuthead.
This is so demeaning. I have a PhD in film.
Okay, Dr. Nuthead, why don't you sing John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt while I drink a glass of water?
John Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt, that's my name too.
Spit in the water.
Nuthead.
He's a very huge man.
I love the idea. Yeah, Kareem's 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just pretty much anybody looks like a ventriloquist dummy next to him.
And a 5 foot man.
Jay's like
Sherman.
About 5 feet, something like that. So
I love the follow up line with Franklin and Eleanor.
Didn't we have a Nuthead doll?
No, you're thinking of our son.
Yeah, I mean, well, on the TV, they are literally strangling each other.
Yeah.
Which, again, that would be a high rated show where Jay Sherman is strangling or Kareem Abdul Jabbar.
What if he strangled Roger Ebert? Think of the headline.
And that, yeah, well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was famous. He was one of the best ever of his generation, but he also was seen as having attitude problems, and which is not fair. Like, and it's actually crystallized in his amazing scene in Airplane of the kid.
You don't have to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court every night.
He's just like, I'm not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's like, my dad says you don't try hard until the playoffs. Like, that was the feeling, and part of it too was. Maybe white America not liking that a black Muslim had opinions, perhaps?
Could be.
Maybe. Well, and that he'd become a black Muslim. He started as Lou Alcindor.
That's right. Yeah, Sweet Lou.
Then became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So Jay enrolls Marty in a judo class at Hey Judo, just for the sake of getting a free ice cream cake. And it's here we meet Satoshi, the Eater of Souls.
Marty, your opponent will be Satoshi, the Eater of Souls.
Who has disturbed my thousand-year sleep?
And so now we can talk about a good 20 minutes on Carvel ice cream cakes.
First,
I do think Satoshi is based on Shao Kahn. I think that's the design. He's supposed to look like
He just looks like any towering samurai.
I guess so.
With like a demon face, though. And, I mean, you can't even really see. Just glowing eyes.
Yeah. Well, I'm also glad it's judo and not karate. That feels like an update. Maybe they also said, like, Bart went to karate class. Let's send Marty to judo. Or just to get the Hey Judo joke, which is a cute little sign.
They already did high karate at low prices, so where are you going to go from there?
I do like that because he, they're giving away the free ice cream cake, that it establishes that Satoshi is just there also for the free ice cream.
Yeah. Oh, let's talk about that ice cream.
And like Jay, he's going to eat an entire one by himself. Yeah, I didn't know what Cookie Puss was until Patton Oswalt came into
the house. Let's hear the cake. Yeah,
this is an East Coast thing, though. I grew up with these commercials.
I was in Ohio.
Patton.
That's not East Coast.
No, it was more
in Pennsylvania.
Tri-state area.
It's East Coast.
No, it's not.
It is.
But yeah, okay.
It's near it.
So Patton Oswalt can explain Tom Carvel better than me. And this is from his 1997 stand-up act. So baby Patton Oswalt.
He's a little baby in diapers here.
And you just, oh, God, turn that off. It was amazing listening to him, too. He goes, hi, this is Tom Carville. Carville Ice Cream Stores. Just in time for Father's Day, we have Fudgy the Whale. That's right. Fudgy the Whale. It's a big six-layer ice cream cake. And we'll put your dad's name on it. Frosting will write, you're a whale of a dad on it. And the frosting color of your choice. And a participating Carville Ice Cream Store near you. Also, from outer space, we have Cookie Puss. That's right, Cookie Puss. It's a big chocolatey outer space alien. And he's not going to probe your rectum like the aliens in Whitley Strieber's Communion. So it's safe to come on in and pick up a big old Cookie Puss any holiday of the year. And you could not cut those cakes with a fucking lightsaber. Your dad would dislocate his shoulder. These ice cream cakes. Ah, you bastards!
Okay, I can listen to that all day, but we have a show to record.
So yeah, that was tough. His boy was like Tom Carville as the owner of Carvel Cakes. He's like, I can do the commercials.
That's the story of every local business, though. Actually, yeah. I just saw something on Facebook where it's like these two people in their 60s who own a car dealership were like, "What if we did songs from Grease in our car commercial?" And I watched it. I'm like, no. Wow, this is bad. This might be the worst thing I've seen.
And Cookie Puss had his own story to him. It's actually a really great joke on the new season of Mystery Science Theater that the Carvel ice cream places reused the same tin size that Cookie right. Puss, no, that Fudgy the Whale and Santa Claus were the same tin. They just
right.
colored
they just
it differently.
Rotate it and color it different.
Yes. That's why Cookie Puss is an abomination.
Yes, well, so Cookie Puss, it's not really a cat. He says he's a space cat. Actually, so he's a space cat, and here's Cookie Puss selling himself to you in a classic
They
commercial.
Call him a cat?
What?
Yeah, it was just that it
Puss was face.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, he's a space creature.
But he's sort of peanut shaped.
Yeah, but I mean, no one associates the word puss with a face or a cat anymore.
No.
Carvel Celestial Person from Outer Space. My real name is Cookie Puss, but my friends call me CP. I'm a Carvel ice cream cake, and I made fresh daily at participating Carvel ice cream stores. Yeah.
Cookie Puss will be at your participating Carvel ice cream stores. Please visit them. Or if you call this toll-free number, you can send Cookie Puss to a friend and
Okay, yeah. I mean,
that's Tom Carvel right there. You said
that's him sounding
Puss.
Better than I remember
yeah,
him sounding.
Doesn't sound quite as fat and sweaty as Oswald's
yeah,
version.
Yeah, I remember him not sounding out of breath, but I clearly remember being a little kid watching TV Sunday morning in Philadelphia and thinking like, that guy's got a deep voice. It was really sort of like lifelong smoker kind of voice over down here. And he's going to Cookie Puss. He's Cookie Puss. Which is like a peanut-shaped thing, and its nose is an entire ice cream cone.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love ice cream cakes, but I just didn't have a Carvel where I lived. Like, I think around in my 20s, the local grocery store like had their own Carvel section. Like, hey, we shipped in Carvel cakes, so they were just Carvel branded cakes. Also, if you're a Steven Universe fan, Cookie Puss was the inspiration for the first episode Steven Universe
Cookie
bit
Cat.
Of Cookie Cat, who even is a cat from outer space and is an ice cream cat. So Cookie Cat, but he's much more fun. It starts as a Cookie Puss commercial that then turns into a fun 90s rap commercial.
The Critic will be right back, you TV-addicted couch monkeys.
Wednesday, Al's girl has visions of another man.
He was wearing bicycle shorts.
You're driving yourself crazy over a silly dream of some jerk in it.
It wasn't just some jerk, Tim. It was you.
Home Improvement. Then Grace has her eye on a new man.
I've seen you out in the yard.
I've seen you, too.
We never made any eye contact, though.
Well, but you got eyes in your butt.
Grace Under Fire, Wednesday.
Watch my new show, The Critic, from the producers of The Simpsons. Only this time, they're sober. Ugh.
The Critic, coming soon.
Where were we now?
So, well, the entire reason Cookie Puss now is back, because, yes, Satoshi, Eater of Souls, gets his free Cookie Puss, and he says something I quote so often, it's embarrassing. I will eat your soul, Cookie Puss.
And I never noticed, but the background of that scene, I love it. The woman at the Carvel ice cream stand like puts both hands on her face with this expression of horror.
No, Cookie Puss came here to be your friends.
Why
would you eat the cake's soul?
And they drew a pretty accurate Cookie Puss in his hands,
too. It looks like Cookie Puss. So, yeah, anytime time I get something I've wanted for a long time, and that cheesesteak, cheesesteak works too. Cheesecake or cheesesteak shows up. So I will eat your soul cheesesteak.
Man, you're so Philly. Man,
God.
I do. I love a cheesesteak, but actually my favorite meat sandwich based on a locale is a Italian beef and pepper one from Chicago, Chicago-style Italian
beef. Is that grinder over there, or they're still hoagie? I don't know.
No, not hoagie. I think they're grinders. I'm going to say grinders.
I like whatever kind of pizza makes New Yorkers mad.
Okay.
I'm eating.
That's fair.
I do love that pizza.
My pizza has pistachios on it. Eat shit. It's good.
Then they have a second for two in LAJ. They had a makeover scene. Now they're having a makeover scene with Jay and Marty. Though that is when Marty discovers his stomach can move, which that shows some like stomach muscles he has.
Yeah,
that he
I love the store though that it's Fat City, and
that is great.
Mannequins in the window are like an angry fat guy and a fat guy watching TV in a lazy boy.
It's great.
Well, the reference is the movie reference, right, Diana?
Yeah. Well, yeah. we got a movie reference.
Yeah,
there.
The 1973 boxing movie Fat City.
That's true.
They've had to write like 13 different big and tall store names in the critics so far, and I think this could be the best one.
That's true. I forgot how they're running out of them because he has to go to fat, big and tall stores so many times. Like Homer only goes to one once, and that's where he gets his moo-moo.
The gentleman of your carriage.
Side
Something
note.
Something with computers.
When Hunter S. Thompson was running for sheriff of Aspen, one of his platforms was that he wanted to change the name of Aspen to Fat City so that tourists wouldn't come there anymore.
But Jake could be too sexy for Fat City.
I'm too tubby for my shirt, too paunchy for my shirt, so bloated it hurts. And I can't zip up my slacks, the zipper's off its tracks, I've stretched it to the max. Ow!
I'm going to say, don't ever do an I'm Too Sexy joke, but since it was John Lovett singing, I'll allow it.
It makes it better.
Yeah.
And though this implies that he's too fat for the clothes of the fat store.
Yeah, and he seems happy about this.
He's still too fatter city, I think.
He's forgotten. He's past shame now. He's like, I'm going to celebrate this. I'm too. Mm-hmm. It also reminds me of the King of the Hill episode where Bobby becomes a proud fat clothes kid.
Right, Husky Bobby, which we saw them read live in San Francisco.
Oh, it was a
live read. With the whole cast. So great.
Let's go tell Bobby he's fat.
Oh, that's so great. And
then we go straight into another movie reference.
Well, the Cheer Up Marty store. They pass by the Cheer Up Marty store, which is not a clever name. But I do like that it won't open until 1997, which in 1994 felt far away.
It really did. Yeah. And I mean, Marty, did you already get the Steve Allen book all about him? Like,
yes.
Feel Better Marty or whatever?
It's at number three on the, Marty, come on, cheer up. Everybody's rooting for you, Marty.
The Twins reference, right, Diana?
No, that is not a Twins reference.
Oh, man, I always think Twins.
I made the same mistake.
Yeah. Was it a Rain Man?
That is a Rain
That's
Man
what I thought.
Reference.
Okay.
The music underlines it. There's two guys wearing the same, you know, dressed up in nice suits, the same suit. Light colored, going down an escalator.
Right.
That part makes it Rain Man, plus the music is sort of like the song that they use in Rain Man a whole bunch.
Okay.
Whatever.
Old Rainy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Ico.
I think of Twins because there's a very similar shot in Twins that they're not referencing Rain Man. It's like, look at these two people, wildly different looking, who are wearing the same thing, like white suits.
No, if they're coming down an escalator, that makes it Rain Man.
Right.
Well, those outfits are very close to what Cruz and Hoffman wear in Rain Man.
Are the clowns coming up the escalator also from Rain Man?
Let's pretend yes.
I feel bad for them that they feel shame about those costumes just because they see. Basically, they're clones in clown makeup. It's just like, well, who cares if they're clowns? Like, if they look good.
They're
like,
having a nice Father Sunday clowning at the mall.
Which they are the exact doubles of Jay and Marty. Like, they should have had a Homer-type moment of, this guy's my exact double.
Maybe the point is that, like, oh, our nice suits are these guys' clown costumes.
Yeah.
Oh, I also love that this is the second time Jay has met an exact double of his. The first one was in Miserable when the woman flies off the bench and into the arms of Guy Incognito.
All right.
Then also we get the Jay says he isn't gay, but I think he's gay for at least one guy.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear that. So I guess he's going to convince Marty to pick up the guitar as a way to cheer himself up.
How about a guitar, Marty? Would you like that?
I don't know, Dad.
It's perfect. Musicians don't have to be handsome. And do they get beautiful women? Let me just say two words to you. Lyle Lovett.
I thought he was handsome.
No, you're thinking of John Lovett. And I agree. With his Sephardic good looks, he takes the cake.
So yes, Jay is gay, but only for John Lovitz.
Yes,
and who he looks just like.
And Gene Reese loved that term, Sephardic good looks. It was how Lisa would refer to Mr. Bergstrom.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
I think it's something. I think it's probably closer to Mike Reese's heart than Gene. He is the Sephardic person of the.
When am I going to hear something about one's Ashkenazic good looks? That's the side of the Jews I'm on. Sephardic Jews are ones that were kicked out of Spain in 1492, and Ashkenazics are the ones that ended up in Poland and got shat on by the Russians.
In the next act, the Jayola scandal is brewing. We're going to hear from people on the street what they think about this horrible scandal.
I'm sorry. I just don't find Mr. Sherman's antics amusing. And this J. Sherman roach spray just makes the roaches look like J. Sherman.
It's not funny, but what he does for those sick kids is God's work.
You're thinking of Jerry Lewis.
Who are you, the amazing Kresge?
Kreskin.
Oh, boy, you're good.
So unscrupulous media giant Duke Phillips now owes the public hundreds of millions of dollars. Perhaps this will finally excise this cancerous tumor, Duke Phillips, from the American media scene. Jack Peters, Phillips Network News.
Hey, idiot! You're fired!
I'm off like a prom dress.
I think it's the first time we learned that guy's name. He's like the Kent Brockman of The Critic. Yeah.
I've referred to him so many times as the anchor, and he will get his job back or will get a job somewhere else. He's their anchor for everything. But I feel like if he was supposed to be their Brockman, they'd have given him a more original name than Jack Peters.
Yeah.
But
that's pretty vague.
That J. Sherman roach spray makes no sense.
That's a medical, like, scientific breakthrough, turning roaches into small humans.
Yes, and that why would they make it? Why would a television critic of moderate success get a roach spray named after him? Makes no sense.
Think about miserable all the J paraphernalia and accessories.
Yes,
like,
that's true.
Some make sense, like a VCR winder. Some don't, like cereal, things like that.
But it also doesn't fit with the idea that Jay is unpopular, because then why would they make all this stuff? But I love it because it makes no sense that in this world there's a roach spray that turns roaches to look like a person.
Yeah.
And that will then hack like them too.
Oh, that's horrifying.
It seems
the
like...
only way to make roaches worse is to make them make weird noises.
And Payola, Jayola is a parody of Payola, which is DJs being bribed to play music on the radio, which now there are no real DJs anymore, and they have very strict lists of music they play, so there's no more Payola.
Yep.
It's
also
just hyper-corporatized.
I never would have noticed if I hadn't paused just about the right spot when the camera – or, I mean, they have a shot of the crowd of all the people protesting wanting their money because Jay's not funny. Mm-hmm. Really fast, one of them is holding a sign that says, Jay Sherman is not healthy for children and other living things.
Oh, yeah, I caught that.
That's great.
It goes by so fast, which is an old anti-Vietnam War sign from the late 60s.
Another Mother for Peace slogan.
Yep.
To take off on that, yeah. So Marty's guitar playing is, as Nelson said, polywally crappy. And Marty is failing at another thing.
This is another middle class white kid thing of, like, you probably owned a guitar.
I did. I took lessons.
Yeah, I didn't. My brother did, though, and he did take lessons.
I'm going to make it out of this town, man.
Yeah, and it is eventually you learn that playing a guitar is not easy, and learning it is a profession, and who wants that? Like, the highest my friends got in that ability was, like, I learned how to play a cover of a Sublime song. I can play this at parties and annoy people. That's all I need to know.
And we learned that Richard Lewis is competing with Jay for the unfunniest
That's
man on
TV. That's a mean joke.
I gotta say, he was in a lot of garbage sitcoms, like Anything But Love.
Yes.
And I looked it up. I think they're referencing a 13-episode sitcom he did in 1993 with Don Rickles called Daddy Dearest. And I was going to play a clip, but it is so shrill and irritating. It is of the Fox sitcom model of this era where it's like, these aren't even jokes. Two characters will insult each other for an entire scene and then just, like, walk away. And that's the entire episode.
I just want to see them have coffee. I don't want to see them act out stuff.
Richard Lewis is funny. I like it. Like,
he was the best part of Men in Tights.
Yes.
Yes.
His stand-up is good. And I also really love him in Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's really good in that.
Yeah, he's great on that.
No, he's really good
so
in it.
Funny.
Yeah,
one of the regulars. And we also get to meet. I love Ted Disingenuous. He's one of my favorites. That is Duke's lawyer.
My new lawyer.
And Ted Disingenuous.
The other guy is literally Jimmy Stewart. It is Jimmy Stewart who is the class action lawsuit lawyer. And he's like, isn't that a tad disingenuous?
And so up next we get a courtroom scene, which I don't think the critic does a lot with. It's kind of an Algie and Mike Reese thing. I mean, it's a very easy way to get jokes out of this. So there's like a place where there are certain rules about how to talk and act, and you can break all those rules for humor. But here is the one scene we get, and we're going to hear from all the people who are suing Jay Sherman.
Due to the huge number of plaintiffs in this case, I've decided to house the overflow in the fabulous Meadowlands Sports Complex in Secaucus, New Jersey.
We're all suing Jay Sherman. We want damages too. We're going to take him for every nickel.
You're the reason that we're in this pickle.
Shut up.
It really is Duke's fault. This is Duke's
fault. It's all his
fault. Oh, my God. See, Caucus, New Jersey made me realize we missed the fascinating people at Fat City.
Oh, yes.
Who decided that they can't stand it there and they will flee to Hohokus and Weehawken, the twin jewels in Jersey's
the
crown.
The twin jewels.
Michael asked me, are those are real places? Well, those are real places.
Weehawken I knew, but Hohokus sounds...
Hohokus, and it's spelled weirder than you expect.
It sounds like Hoboken plus Hocus Pocus.
It's a magic spell that takes you to Jersey. Don't say it three times.
And Hohokus, where the city song is Hocus Pocus by Focus.
Oh, God.
Focus by Hocus Pocus.
That's two. Please, Michael, don't.
It's spelled H-O-H-O-hyphen. KUS or CUS? I forget. I don't know. It's in North Jersey. I think I've driven through it.
It's something that makes it feel more of a New York-based show because New York comedians love making fun of New Jersey. They love, even though New Jersey looks nice.
Parts of it are great. Yeah. But Hohokus and Weehawken aren't next to each other, though. They're like 30 miles away.
It's a big crown.
I guess that fat loser has a house in two of those cities.
Maybe. He's fancy.
There's a brief scene with Franklin in that we learn he appointed that judge and Mr. Potato Head.
That's so great.
Where does his line come from? I was hypnotized.
I was hoping somebody else. I wonder if it was Flip Wilson. Because like a Here Come the Judge character.
That's true.
Like,
the devil made me do it.
Yeah. I was hypnotized. But that was a very funny delivery. And another callback to that, Franklin was previously the governor of New York.
That's right. But every comedy show in 1994 was required by law to do it in a Few Good Men parody. And here is yet another one. Duke is dressed up as a military general. And this is a direct scene from the movie.
Marine Colonel, thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Did you offer to pay $100 to whomever didn't laugh, Jay Sherman? You don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question.
Don't answer that question.
Damn it, I'm going to answer the question. Yes, I sold the mustard gas to Gaddafi.
Sir, this is the Jay Sherman trial.
I mean... Oh, mustard gives me gas, as does taffy.
I have the same trouble with fresh fruit.
Cute joke. It's very similar to the Jay and Grossman going back and forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They love that wordplay. But that actually is a funny scene, but we just watched the episode Sideshow Bob Roberts, which has the ultimate truth handler scene.
Right.
Bah, I deride your truth handling abilities.
No truth handler you.
there's no topping it. And nobody does parodies of Few Good Men anymore. Few Good Men. It's just another forgotten 90s film.
No, we're all sorkened out right now. So, Jay saves the day by his pants rip, revealing his rear window boxers. And we get one little cute line from Duke.
Jay, your butt saved my butt. And I hope that's the only interaction I'll ever have.
Ass to ass. There's got to be fan art of that somewhere.
Oh, God.
And if not, someone just sent it to us, I bet.
Also, I want rear window swag.
Where did he even get that? He should have, that would have to be a hand-me-down.
Just imagining that, as a promo item sent out to critics for rear window. Hitchcock personally approved this.
And I think Jay is really owed a bonus because he saved Duke probably $1 billion.
You really did,
But he saved his butt. Jay wasn't in trouble. I mean, sure, Jay would definitely lose his job if Duke Phillips got shut down, but Jay wasn't going to be personally responsible for paying those people. Mm-hmm. So, Duke really owes him. And then this, I wonder if that I thought that judge was fun. I wonder if he would have turned into the Judge Snyder of this show too. That Judge Snyder is the bearded judge who kind of looks like Bork on The Simpsons. And so maybe this judge could have been that as well for the future lawyer scenes. And I wish we had seen Tad Disingenuous again.
I do love Tad. I just like his name. Yeah. Yes,
it's Tad Disingenuous.
And we get the touchy-feely ending to this act, and we just completely forget about Jay's predicament. And he's going to the talent show, and Marty is dressed up like Bruce Springsteen for his guitar performance.
I guess he's born in the USA costume specifically. Yeah.
I mean, you think if he – I guess he's sensitive about his weight. Why would he just have a vest and nothing on under it?
It's true.
But the Pope and Nelson Mandela are in the audience.
And they're here to party.
They came to party.
Oh, wait. Is it really a Springsteen outfit or is it a Jimi Hendrix outfit?
You know what? I think he does do – I mean, no, wait. The other player does Hendrix later. I think it is Springsteen.
I lean towards Springsteen, but I haven't seen him that shirtless during shows. But am I just not enough of a fan to know?
I don't know. He is another king of Jersey, so
it's true.
That's true. Hendrix, I mean, with the headband, yes, but the outfit, Hendrix wore more.
That's true.
He wore lots more.
And that is when the Easter Island kid dies for the first time.
That's
He falls off his unicycle and smashes his head off screen.
It's such a great visual.
What would that look like?
And the Easter Island kid who's so top heavy decides unicycle. This is it.
And that in Easter Island, by the way, humans live there, not people with heads shaped like the Easter Island. Heads.
And aren't there bodies under those heads too?
They eventually discover those, which it felt weird that they only did that recently. It's like, did you guys never dig around those heads until now? Like,
Now they're a World Heritage Site, so it's a little harder to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I love the Iraqi impressionist because I hate America.
I didn't capture it, but it's another Tony Curtis reference.
Yes,
Tony Curtis throws to Johnny Carson.
They just asked Maurice, like, which could you do? Like,
was Kirk Douglas part of that too or no?
No, it was just Curtis to Carson.
They had two Kirk Douglases in a row.
and now two Tony Curtises in a row, which obviously his best scene is like, I love you, Spartacus. He called me Spartacus.
Side note, I really like how shitty Ardeth is in this episode because she's just continually negative, completely passive aggressive about the whole thing. And just like, you know, Marty's playing and she just closes the door and then balls Jay out.
Yeah.
And at the talent show, it's like, our son's about to embarrass himself and it's all your fault. It's like, you could have done something to stop this horrible thing.
I love her reaction of like, it had to be a guitar.
That's a great line.
Because he lives with her mainly. And so she has to hear it. Of like, I think of that whenever people get a kid who's not their kid a gift that makes noise. And the parents are just like, you had to get this noise maker.
That is so cruel. Like,
what do you have against us?
All the residents of Alimony Towers are screaming at her right now.
Including the guitar teacher who lives upstairs.
Yes, I am his guitar teacher.
That's right. I forgot that.
So we do get Zoltan's
song. We get a
cheap
highlight.
Let's hear it all.
Hello. I would like to dance and sing my country's national anthem. You don't understand. He's singing of all the people who died in the earthquake, fire, and famine of 1805.
So along with buying a yacht, I guess they can also afford gender reassignment surgery for Zoltan.
Yes.
I cut that joke out.
The boy who used to be a girl. Oops, that used to be a secret.
That's pretty crappy, that principle again. And that was clear ADR, which it's like, that's not – you could say it's progressive. And now, like, there's way more trans children now than there were then.
The backstory, I mean, it could have been born intersex. He could have made a choice. Maybe his parents made this choice for him. I took it as an intersex joke.
Totally. Based on the time frame, intersex or at the time hermaphrodite were the jokes that they would do.
Yeah, like they started out raising him as a girl and decided, let's go with a guy. Or maybe the really fucked up version is Vlada wanted a boy so much.
But what about Vlada Jr.? We know he exists.
Oh, right. Oh. Yeah. Vlada Jr. and Zoltan. Okay.
Yeah. but, okay, that's a good point.
The song itself might be one of my all-time favorite critic jokes because it's a really cheap joke.
It's so
but
cheap.
Then the laughter plus explanation of tragedy.
Yeah.
And then he sings it again and nobody can keep a straight face. Everybody just
so saying pee-pee and poopy describes flood and fire and famine.
Yeah, I guess so.
In whatever Vlada's native language is, sure.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember relaying this joke to my dad and like him finding it hilarious.
It is. I like that the audience is – they feel bad that they were so offensive at laughing at it and then they can't contain it.
Yeah,
still.
That immediately goes away.
Even with the context, they can't stop themselves.
So the rest of the episode is basically all visual. I have no clips for any of this. But this is all like Lauren McMullen again directing this episode. She's one of the best animation directors for television.
Did Little Deb.
Yeah. And this is just all great virtuoso animation performance and a great flamenco guitar performance by this woman. I forget what the girl's name is actually.
Yeah, she's a great guitar player. I have seen that plot. It's actually a plot on Doug as well, of being at a talent show and then having the person before you do your thing and then you have to come up with something new and you're kind of screwed by them cannibalizing your performance. Though,
oh, that happened to me once.
Really?
Yeah. I was playing just like a backyard show with my stupid high school band and there was a group of older, more professional musicians who went on before us. And like talked to them beforehand and we had said like, oh, because they played like a version of Blitzkrieg Bop. And like, well, one of our songs is Blitzkrieg Bop. And they're like, oh, we just won't do ours then. That's fine. And then, of course, they did it. And like, oh, what do we do?
Well, that's just cruel.
Yeah.
Like, you asked
but I mean, we were terrible anyway, and the show got shut down by neighbors as we were performing. So,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There ought to be another song that had three chords you could learn in like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Well, Green Day wasn't that popular yet. Maybe.
That's still a sweet thing you can still brag about, though. You were so fucking loud they had to shut you down.
That's pretty great.
The man couldn't stand us.
You rock so hard.
But in those, I think at least at a school function that whoever is planning it should know all the acts ahead of time and it out correctly.
The principal's a cruel motherfucker. I think he did this on purpose.
He told her, hey, you should play Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yeah, I bet. Why? Yeah, because it totally makes sense now because her being a guitar virtuoso, she would never play Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yep.
She, number one, that is an all-American song, so what would she do that? She's playing classical guitar more in the style of her heritage, and then she plays Yankee Doodle Dandy of all things, and at least like when the guitar starts rocking out that it is plugged in to be like, okay, it is an electric guitar now, it's gone electric, even though it looks exactly like an acoustic guitar.
She plays it behind her head too.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, and her classical guitar playing is about as good as Lisa Simpson's in Last Exit to Springfield, and she plays classical gas. I wonder who's better.
It's no classical gas. But in attempting to play Yankee Doodle, a string breaks on Mario's guitar.
No.
It is humiliating. It hurts you to see.
This is the only other thing I know how to do. Mm-hmm. And he turns it into an entire act. He smokes a pipe. He makes a flag wave. He does the Iwo Jima flag raising. I mean,
doing a little belly dance
thing. He did do a great job.
It's all magic. And there's a very bad ADR line about how Jay Sherman's butt can deal blackjack.
Yeah, I don't know what that line could have been before. He's looking directly at the screen, so he has to be speaking to the audience.
And Ardeth is kind of like glaring at him while he's saying it. So it's like, oh, this is not just an aside outside of the show, wall break.
I wonder if Ardeth is thinking like, you broke the fourth wall all the time when we were married. Now you're still doing it, huh?
I can't believe you. Well,
I'm such a dork that I actually can tell you the names of the songs that are playing during this thing. Yeah. The belly dancing music is called Streets of Cairo.
Oh, okay.
And the Popeye music is called Sailor's Hornpipe.
Oh.
Interesting.
I can die now that I've told the world.
And then, of course, Stars and Stripes Forever.
Stars and Stripes Forever.
Well, you, there's a classic Laser Time episode about
this
very subject.
I love that one, yeah.
All the classical music they use in cartoons. I keep planning on a follow-up and keep not doing it because I've got this sort of thing to do. I want to talk about movie dork stuff.
Yay.
And,
so,
and they did animate the Pope and Nelson Mandela dancing in the aisle. It's like 2 seconds, but they are there.
Aww, hey, they were there. But
so happy.
We flash forward to the far-off, distant future of 2014 where just like the bum, Marty plays Carnegie Hall. And let's hear that.
Before I begin my concert, I would like to honor my father. From him I learned not to give up, that you'll find you're the best at something, And today I'm the world's greatest stomach virtuoso. And he is the world's fattest man.
That's my boy.
It's Maurice LaMarche burping, but I love that drawing of Fat Jay.
It's if they ever
revive the critic, I fully expect him to show up like that in the first episode.
I really want
to
see that. Yeah.
Well, if Jay is 54 and the world's fattest man, he'll be dead in any minute now. Like, you can't be.
But he could go to the liposuction clinic for like 3 years and he'll be
it's
fine.
True. That's He's true, at the yeah. same weight level he was when he tried to fix his show.
Yeah.
That's true. Man, I forgot about that. It's the same Fat Jay drawing, even with the same droopy voice man underneath him.
Oh, like, right, yeah.
They draw the same thing, but I... Jay is the world's fattest man and just in the front row, and he's just so proud of himself, eating an entire chicken in one hand with a food in the other hand.
I hope they're serving those there and he didn't bring it from home.
I would bet it's just attached to his hand at all times.
So yeah, this episode, it's kind of uneven.
It's a messy
one. I mean, we came after right after Dr. Day, which is great. So just like, I could tell when they're trying to sweeten Jay and sweeten the show, and it just feels off to me because this is a very like cynical, bitter show. As much as I like Jay and Marty's relationship, I feel like I can tell when they're trying to make it sweeter for ABC.
I think this episode kind of reveals the flaws in Marty, and that he's not cute enough to be the Sweetums kid, and he's or to be like that he can't have. They need more cuteness, and it is why they'll bring in Alice and her extra cute daughter in season two.
Yeah, Penny.
To cuten things up with Penny. Marty just kind of can't handle it. Meanwhile, the B plot is great, but could be in any episode. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, all of America was suing Jay Sherman, and then he just shows up at a talent show. It's like go from high stakes to like no stakes in one episode. It's really weird. That was a day at the races, night at the opera. So what did we all think of this? I mean, I gave my opinion, and I want to know what you guys think about it in terms of it being uneven or
– Yeah, I agree. It's just sort of uneven. It is so much nicer when the A plot and the B plot line up on sort of a theme or they share a beat or something. You know, it's cute. I like spending time with Marty because, you know, he is a good kid who's just barely edging into being gross like Jay.
Yeah.
But he could come back from the dark side.
Yeah. I think having just rewatched it twice in a row, it still hasn't gelled in my mind as a single episode. Like, I still think of this as like being from two different episodes.
Yeah, like what is attached to what? I forget.
The A and B plot. I think the plot with Marty is very memorable, and I think it's one of the all-time most memorable moments in this series. But
it's because of Satoshi.
It's mostly because of Satoshi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also,
I love Satoshi so much.
The being sued plot is just sort of meh.
Yeah. It's okay. I just like anything with Duke Phillips in it.
You know, Duke Phillips isn't actually going to be bankrupted unless the episode arc is going to be him getting his money back.
So yeah, thank you everybody for listening. This has been Talking Critic, and I have been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts every Monday at Retronauts.com, or look for Retronauts in your podcast device. It's a classic gaming show. If you're not into Retronauts, I suggest you get into it right now.
Yeah.
Go to Retronauts and find an episode that you want to listen to and download it. Any subject you want to find. We probably have done an episode on it. So yes, please listen to Retronauts.
And I am HENEREYG on Twitter. You can follow me there. And I want to thank everybody who's listening to this for being a patron and supporting us. We are doing this because of your support, and Bob and I can do this full time thanks to you. And
you can follow me on Twitter at Wikiparaz. That's WikiParaz, not easy. And listen to me every week on Vigigame Apocalypse, which goes out Fridays on the Lasertime Network at VigigameApocalypse.com.
Diana?
And I'm also on Twitter, nominally, mostly talking about classic movie stuff. As you, if you can tell, bit of a movie dork. I don't have my PhD in film. I have a BA, though, in cinema.
Badass.
Thank you. Yeah,
a badass
right.
of film.
Badass.
Song. And but yeah, I am on Twitter at LecineNerd, LecineNerd. And I'm also on a weekly podcast called 302010, which is at 302010.net. Those are the words, not the numbers. And we talk about this very week, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago in movies and TV and music. And man, 1987, 1997 have been fantastic. We're probably past Princess Bride. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Uneasy Rider. Woo! See you then.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.